from all parties. The call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. And
thank
Jonathan
you,
Zuck has just joined.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's CCI work group call on Wednesday, the 27th of July. We have Carlos Aguirre, Alex Gakuru, Rosemary Sinclair, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Steve Del Bianco, Jonathan Zuck. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, and myself, Gisela Gruber. And we have apologies noted today from Olivier Crépin-Leblanc and Michael Salazar. If I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Rosemary.
Thanks, Gisela. I've put up an agenda, which I see on the Adobe Connect screen. I thought I'd just go through where I got to with the charter and the motion. Then we can get pretty much straight back into the discussion of the definitions. The charter is up on the screen, and thanks to everybody for your input on that. It certainly wound up being a better document than it was when we started, and I guess in particular I'm talking about the motion here. What happened with the motion, unhappily, is that I thought I had correctly posted it, but it was my first such motion, and it turns out I hadn't posted the motion correctly, so I didn't meet the time frame for the GNSO Council call. I've since sent the motion to all councillors so that we can discuss it between our meetings. Our next meeting is the 8th of September, but I would like to propose that we keep working as a group, even though this motion has not been passed by the GNSO Council yet. So are there any comments about that or thoughts? Perhaps before I just finish, the motion has been written so that we propose firstly a cross-community working group, but perchance that is not passed, bearing in mind that GNSO Council is actually doing a piece of work at the moment on cross-community working groups, so there may be a little hesitation until that work is finished. But in the alternative, I've proposed that the group be set up under the auspices of GNSO, but of course being the open group that it is now. So are there any comments or thoughts about that?
Rosemary, it's Steve. I had a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the council call, and I was interested to know whether there was any pushback that you got on list. I didn't read council list, but do councillors generally understand and appreciate the idea of a charter? And then secondly, kind of communications with CCNSO and with the ALAC.
Yes, I didn't get any pushback, Steve, on the list or privately, so I'm just expecting there to be an open discussion and for the motion to go ahead at the next meeting. John Barad is on the call, and perhaps John would like to give his views on that.
Hey, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever. I don't think there's any there was any pushback. I didn't hear anything either in words or tone. I do think that there's a sense that on the GNSO Council, the operating model for cross constituency working groups hasn't been worked out. And so why dive into an unknown end of the pool? Why not just make it a working group of the GNSO Council? You can still accomplish everything you want to accomplish without having to take a whack at that particular hornet's nest right now. But either way, I don't think there's any doubt but that there's Everybody survive?
Only just. That was good through the headset.
I don't think there's any, I believe there's nothing but support for a charter to move this thing forward.
Thanks. And Cheryl, I see your chat response with respect to the...
Oh, and it's continuing. Don't worry, there's plenty of things typed here.
Yeah, exactly. Are you personally comfortable with the draft charter that, you know, Rosemary put together?
I'm very comfortable with a draft charter, and I believe if and when such a miracle happens as GNSO supporting a cross-community work group for this or any other purpose, it's an ideal model.
Excellent. And do we know, we have any idea on CCNSO and how they feel about this draft?
I was going to raise it, but like most of us, Leslie's kind of busy right now. So I had put it in as in any other business for the call that goes out at the beginning. The CCNSO Council meets at the beginning of the month. I will have a quiet chat rather than a on-agenda feel for that, but, you know, when it says thinky, by the way, it should have said thinly. Open work groups in GNSO, Cheryl Langdon, author of the transcript record, open work groups in GNSO are an excellent step forward. They are incredibly important in the PDP and any other form of policy process in the world of the GTLDs, and it's something that certainly ALAC and at large absolutely and ardently support. What it means, however, in circumstances like this is that CCNSO and GNSO will need to now appoint and put into a purely GNSO process a number of representatives, which certainly the ALAC and at large will do, and I suspect CCNSO will do also, but we will find out what happens there. What that of course means is that we severally also have to do the same work. And I think you can just insert whatever you want to in the dotted lines there.
Just on that, Rosemary here, on the CCNSO and GAC point, should I ask Stefan as chair now to write to both of those organisations and let them know where we're up to, I guess, and give them a copy of the draft charter, even ahead of the motion being passed by GNSO Council. I'm just not sure of the protocol here.
Cheryl here, if I may.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thank you. I think it would be wise to do so, Rosemary. In the case of CCNSO, if you attention it to Bart, and he'll make sure that Leslie and the rest of the council discuss it with a copy of this charter, because if we are working severally, then some people may argue, I'd be one of them, that the greater similarity that we can establish between the several charters would be to everyone's advantage. So a courtesy copy of the charter that you believe the GNSO will be agreeing to, and a probable date where that will be happening, will make the planning for the other SO and indeed the other ACs quite helpful. You need to remember, of course, from a GAC perspective, should go to the Secretariat copy to Heather. They don't charter anything. They work in an entirely different manner, so it's a purely for information purpose. However, as a fellow AC, the ALAC and the GAC have launched into a couple of agreements where we are going to be coming out with more and more joint statements and joint advice, and I'm sure those of you skilled in the meaning of words in ICANN will be able to work out where we're heading along those lines, won't you, Steve, in the future. And so we'll, as ALAC, also do our best to make sure that the timely involvement of GAC input early on in the process is managed as best as we can. Thank you.
Okay.
Dave, will you
then... if I could try to respond to your question?
Yes, please.
I appreciate what Cheryl said, and I think protocol is one aspect, but so is the actual tone of this communication.
Mm-hmm.
The protocol is probably correct that it should come from Stefan, because GNSO was one of the four entities that were requested for advice from the board, and it happens to be first of those four entities that's moving. Given that it's first mover, maybe it is appropriate that it come from GNSO, as opposed to, say, a collective GNSO ALAC. But if Stefan were to write it, I'm not sure he would use anywhere near the same accommodating tone that you would use. I would much prefer that you draft it and only ask that Stefan forward it from GNSO as the first of the four ACSOs, and he could forward it to GAC and CCNSO with a copy to ALAC, because ALAC sort of is helping to lead the way along with GNSO.
Okay.
I'm just doing everything I can to make sure that Stefan uses the right tone in this and not let him put it in his own words in a way that might not convey the way we want to get a cooperative, quick response to the board's request for advice.
Okay, well, I'm certainly happy to draft that. That's, in fact, that'll probably be welcomed by Stefan and Glenn, I'm sure. Okay, so any other discussion on the proposed charter and motion? If not, then I think we can get back into the substance of our discussions. I think we started last time on competition. So is it useful to go back to that point? Or is there something, another start point someone would prefer?
Do we
all
have
right.
folks all that weren't on last time that want to hear a recap? I'm wondering. I mean, John Berard, you weren't on last time. I don't remember, Carlos, if you or Alex were.
Does it make, if we're using the VC document as a straw man, does it make sense to put it up on the screen?
That's a good idea. The other document we were using was a document that Wendy Seltzer sent to us. So is it
Rosemary, Margie, I have both of them. Which do you prefer to see first?
I was actually going to ask Margie if it's possible to perhaps in another corner, while we're looking at the CSG version, the business constituency version, to compare the definitions from the one with the other on, say, competition on the same screen. If we can do that, I think that would be great. If not, then we'll just have to flip from one to other. So we've got the BC's position up now. Can everybody see a screen, I guess, is the question to ask at this point.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right, so reading away. Steve, would you mind just talking us through this again?
Sure. So, wanted to cover competition first, Rosemary?
Let's see.
Scroll down to the proposed definition for competition. It says that in the context of the DNS and new GTLDs, competition is the availability of multiple suitable TLDs, multiple registrars, where registrants may seek their desired domain name at reasonable prices and terms. So the notion of availability of multiple suitable TLDs gets to the notion of I can choose from TLDs that fit my purpose. If I'm in banking, I can go to Com, I can go to Country Codes, I can go to maybe .bank or .finance if they're part of the new batch of TLDs that are launched. So giving me the ability to choose among competing value propositions for my TLD is one aspect of competition. The second half of the sentence says, I would like to be able to choose those from multiple registrars, because competition among registrars is often important for pricing and services that are offered. Let's say .bank comes out, but it's only offered through a single registrar, and that may be entirely sensible. It's not the greatest example, but if it's offered through only one registrar, then I have to pay whatever markup that registrar demands. Whereas if multiple registrars offer one of these new TLDs, there's a chance that price competition, if that's what this is about, competition will give me a lower markup on the wholesale cost charged by the registry. And finally, the last piece of this sentence says, at reasonable prices and terms. And that is what you're supposed to get if there's competition. If there's competition, we expect different registrars to vary in their markup. And the length of time, that's what I mean by terms, length of time I can renew, whether they're going to offer me things like privacy registration or value-added services. But the registry himself also dictates prices. If there's registries that launch new TLDs that charge $500 a year per domain name, and they're the only ones serving a particular need, .bike for bicycles. If .bike charges $500 a year and there's no other bicycle-related TLD, I have less choice in competition. I can still always get a COM or a NET or a CC, but clearly pricing will start to matter, and that'll be part of what we would want to measure.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop there, and maybe we can compare it with what we saw from Wendy Seltzer.
And Margie has put Wendy's definition in the notes of our Adobe Connect area. And
scroll down. Okay, thanks.
So Wendy's definition is that competition is described by economic measures, including the number of suppliers, market concentration, ease of entry, and pricing close to marginal cost. So that is very much a supply-side definition of competition. Whereas the definition Steve was taking us through is much more of a demand side. So perhaps if we open up for discussion on the two approaches to defining competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is Jonathan Zook, sorry. I think that what we have to be cautious of with Wendy's suggestion is that we predetermine what the take-up or pricing, et cetera, is going to be in order to define competition. Because with a lot of these, new domains, the issue is whether or not there's a valid choice, and that valid choice may involve spending a lot more for a domain than they currently spend, but that there's a series of ancillary benefits associated with making that choice, right? A dot shop domain that is going to do its own advertising and is going to filter out bad actors and build consumer trust as a great place for people to go shop isn't necessarily going to figure favorably into a $3 per domain name type of scenario. So I think that focusing on people having choices of where to go to build their web presence is probably an important measure.
Thanks, Jonathan. I've got Cheryl and then John Barad in the queue. So, Cheryl?
Thank you, Rosemary. Cheryl Langdonore for the transcript record. I find myself needing to recognize that I think we'll probably have to sort of put up some agreed glossary definitions in our first set of documentation, which may need to have a couple of columns. There are ways of defining things. Wendy's one is arguably a very strong and robust and used in many cases measure of what the definition of competition is. But putting on my purely consumer advocacy and at-large hat for a moment, and particularly with reference to new GTLDs, things like trust and the recognition that, as Jonathan was pointing out, trust comes particularly early in a process with cost associated to it, is going to be hugely important for particularly niche markets' needs being met. I would also remind all of us at this point in time that certainly in some of the CCTLD environments, not, but that's rather more by the accident of how they've been developed than by the design of if we had a blank sheet of paper and was building a domain name industry perspective. The desire for purely marginal cost is one that we have assumed is in end user or registrant best interest. But when we test that in some models, such as exist in some of the CCTLD environments, that's not always the case when consumers are actually, and registrants more to the point, are actually allowed to make that choice. Let me use the Australian Melbourne IT example. A hugely expensive by comparison to the rest of the competition they have set of services, sorry, the competition within the CCTLD, they have set of services are offered right down to the cost of domain name, which is more than in some cases, you know, seven times the average cost for registration. And people are choosing to do that. Now, that still is a valid measure of consumer choice and definitely goes to the trust that the people are making in that choice. And I'm not bundling together the other services. I'm just purely talking about the cost of registering the name for 2 years. So I think we need to be fairly open at this point in time and not necessarily too purist. Thank you.
Cheryl, John?
Sure. I view Wendy's suggested definition of competition as more regulatory regime. In fact, the definition or the description of the elements of a definition of competition, I think, are totally met by the proposed definition that Steve read. The only difference, I guess, would be how you view marginal cost and reasonable prices. Otherwise, I think that what Wendy is saying is that any definition of competition must meet these requirements, and I think the one that Steve read does. So I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, John. That was what Rosemary here. That was what I was thinking as well, that these two definitions are two sides of the same coin, one coming at things from the supply point of view and the other coming at things from the registrant point of view. So I'm not sure that we're too far apart either. The point about marginal cost, I think the issue in formal assessments of competition in a market is that there is a range of costs. So to go back to Cheryl's point, Melbourne IT is at the upper end, and some would say premium pricing because of reputation, but in that particular market there are services available very, very close to marginal cost. So within the market, there's a range of costs. I was wondering whether ICANN, Liz or Margie, has ever done any work describing what a competitive market looks like in the DNS space. Is there any research or other papers that have been done that we could look at? And then I see Steve's in the queue.
Sure, this is Margie. I'm aware of the studies that were done with respect to vertical integration, but I'd have to check to see whether there are anything more specific on these particular definitions.
Would you mind doing that? Because if there's something that has been done, then we ought to at least have a look at that, even if we decide that it's not relevant to our particular work in this area.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you. Steve?
Thank you. I don't think the supplier-consumer distinction is helpful here, because the only thing that matters from the standpoint of the affirmation of commitment is the measure from the perspective of a consumer. And we want to suggest that when a consumer looks at the available TLDs that are suitable to her, she's opening a bike shop, and she wants a domain name that suits the business purpose and the script that she wishes to serve. So at that point, if she's serving the Chinese market, she's going to look for a Chinese script oriented maybe to sports, to commerce, and maybe it's online shopping, or maybe she just has a store and does servicing of bikes. That's what I'm saying, is that in every purpose, commercial versus non-commercial, service versus merchandise, and script,
yes,
and language, each of those constitutes a purpose. And within any given purpose or script, competition would be multiple TLD operators trying to serve her.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I do embrace Wendy's notion of putting a numerical in there, as in she wrote, he includes the words number of suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just embrace that and put in parentheses number of suppliers after the word availability.
Yep.
Availability of multiple suitable TLDs, and you could put including the quantity for the number of suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
But the word suppliers, from all of us that are taking this from a consumer perspective, the number of suppliers means the number of TLD strings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we care that much if the dot bike in English, dot bike in Chinese, dot bike in Arabic are run by the same supplier or not. All we care about, I think, is the availability of multiple strings. And I realize this encroaches a bit on the consumer choice aspect as well. Those are very tough to separate. But I want suppliers to be focused on who's behind the scenes, who's participating as an operator. From the standpoint of a consumer, choice and competition is the ability to pick from among competing TLDs, all of which suit her purpose and script.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to say that the back end matters at all, it would be something in the extent that what percentage of the new TLDs are people that are brand new to running a domain. And I'm not talking about the back end operator, but the registry operator.
Yeah.
And perhaps if all of the new TLDs are operated by two companies, there wouldn't really be much competition.
Mm-hmm.
So there is room in here to bring in metrics on who are the TLD operators. I don't
mm-hmm.
think we extend that all the way back through to ask who's the back-end operator. Who do they buy their routers from? If they all buy their routers from Cisco, well, then we haven't achieved competition. Well, that
mm-hmm.
I think that would miss the point completely. So that's
mm-hmm.
why I don't think we should go any deeper into the supply side
yeah.
than the nature of who the registry operator is, the named applicant,
mm-hmm.
and look for some diversity there. Thank you.
Alex, would you like to come in now?
Yes, thank you, Alex Kakuru, for transcript purposes. I think as we consider competition, one of the things we may wish to look into is the trend that is happening around the world of consolidation and acquisition, and we may even start off with new GTLDs with so many operators, but are we going to suggest or comment or recommend certain restraints so that we don't end up all of them consolidating and getting one operator acquiring all the other TLDs, and then at the end of the day we find it's just a monopoly, duopoly, oligopoly, just so it defeats
mm-hmm.
the whole essence of competition. So I wanted to pose that as a question. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if I could just quickly come back on that, if we think that has the potential to be an issue in the future, then I imagine in our report we would raise that. Our report would say, for example, you can measure things now and they look fine, but it's important to preserve the degree of competition over time for the benefit of consumers. So I would think it could be an issue, Alex, that we raise in the report. Steve, your hand is up. You're wanting to come back again on that?
I wanted to say that I wanted to agree on that we should introduce the notion of prices. And I did have in the BC definition, prices was in there, reasonable prices. So to start to move forward, not necessarily to, I don't agree at all with the marginal cost concept, but there is an ability to compare prices across competing suitable TLDs, which is the same purpose in script, as well as to previously available TLDs, existing TLDs. Mm. So we do want to leave room to compare prices, but not to compare prices to marginal cost, but to compare prices to alternative prices that are offered.
Yep. Pardon me. Having done some work in the telco sector trying to figure out what marginal cost looks like, I also would advise everybody to stay as far away from those calculations as we can. If we're going to be looking at reasonable prices in some period in the future, then we might want to quite quickly have a look at prices now so that we've got some benchmarking. Is there any information source that takes a look at current prices at the moment?
Should I raise my hand here? I'm not used to using the system, but
is this Jonathan?
Yes, it's Jonathan.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess I continue to be concerned about trying to get too specific about what represents reasonable prices, because this initial round has so many different kinds of business models that come into play. I think the last type of competition that's really going to occur is driving what are already very low prices down further. I think it's going to be about value proposition. Mm. So any analysis of pricing has got to include some concept of value, or it's going to be a blind alley. Right? I mean, it's a price domain, but it could still be worth it, and it could be worth switching or at least de-emphasizing my .com presence in order to get the benefits that be inured to me from this new business model.
Yeah, and Rosemary, and then I'll come back to you, Margie. The same sort of issue, Jonathan, arises in the telco sector. For example, if you think about text messages or SMS messages, they are hundreds of multiples of marginal cost, and yet the value to all of us of being able to send a text message is such that we don't even blink at the price of them. So that's the two sides of the coin, of course, the cost of providing the service versus the price we're prepared to pay. And I think this idea of the perspective of value from the consumers is a good notion. And I just was, that reminded me to go back to, I thought what was a really important point that Steve made, and I just want to put it on the table for people to think about, that it's perhaps a principle of our approach to this is that our definitions and measures are going to come squarely from the perspective of the consumers. So rather than coming from the perspective of economic regulators or supply-side participants, our definitions and measures are going to come from the perspective of the consumers and be expressed in language that reflects that. So perhaps while everybody's mulling on that, I'll go back to Margie, I think.
Yes, thank you, Rosemary. Now that group example, we tend to want to move away from discussions related because, you know, I can't body. We've got competitors that are addressing, you know, these issues, and you always, you know, have to worry about the antitrust concerns when competitors talk about things like pricing. So, I mean, I just want to caution you all that, you know, I know at least, you know, to answer the question that I doubt there's very much out there that has studied the pricing from the ICANN perspective, at least, you know, as sponsored by ICANN. and that, you know, we always just have to keep that in mind because we are not a regulatory body. This is, you know, a self-regulation model, and the antitrust laws in the U.S. are fairly strict on some of these issues. So one of the things we did in the past in the vertical integration area, for example, we invited an attorney, I think it was Amy from the legal department, to just kind of provide an overview of the limitations, you know, because of the antitrust concerns, to, you know, to just heighten everyone's, you know, sensitivity to those issues. And we could certainly do that if, you know, if that's something that you'd like. You know, I could, again, ask Amy to make the same similar presentation here.
Okay, well, that takes me back to another thought that I had. We need to kind of be listing these major ideas, which is not to say that we agree on them at the moment, or other resources that could be available to us. So could you note that down for us, Margie, because we may want to come back to that at some stage, in the same way that we're interested in whether there's been any work in the ICANN context on competition as a concept.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you. Steve?
Hey, thank you. Responding to what Margie said, if we design metrics, definitions, and measures for competition, they would be aspirational but not regulatory.
Mm.
The affirmation of commitments is an aspirational document. It's not an imperative to regulate.
Mm.
You're being asked to do definitions, measures, and metrics
so
that ICANN knows what they're trying to shoot for and that we would be able to measure, you know, a year after the first TLD gets into the first new TLD is launched, because that's what the affirmation calls for. I hope that we don't infer by that that if we come up with metrics like number of new entrants, prices versus previous prices, quantity of operators, we're not suggesting in any way that ICANN needs to act like a regulator and force that to happen. It can do things to encourage, to incentivize, but the last thing we want to do is turn you into a micromanaging regulator of that space to suit things like diversity of supply. So I'm hoping there's a middle ground here where we can be aspirational about things like prices and multiple supplier diversity and new entrants without dragging you into a regulatory role. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
Yep, that makes perfect sense to me, Steve, and I've now put that on my little kind of list of the principles of our approach. So our approach is captured by that word aspirational rather than by the word regulatory. So I've got that and the consumer perspective. And then I think the other thing that we're heading towards is a notion of very simple metrics to measure things that can be simply measured that reflect our interests rather than creating huge pieces of work that require very significant calculations of this, that and the other. Now, Alex, I wonder, you've just shared two links with us. I wonder, could you just give us a quick background on those links?
Yes, absolutely. Alex speaking. I decided to post those two because as we talk of pricing, I didn't want to talk of it in the abstract sense of a price that is arbitrary. So these links do give a sort of a broad picture of the pricing. And so as we look at the market and to see of the concentration of market, it gives us a sort of an idea, an overview of what the situation is right now. And again, also, as we are talking, like Wendy had put it, when you're looking at the economics of it and where I come from, I'm also concerned about availability of suppliers in my region. So if they're all going to be, let's say, in North America, and then they're going to be elsewhere, the cost of a domain will be higher for me than somebody who will be in where the registry is located because of many transactional and other related costs. So I think it's just a guide. It's just something to give us a bird's view of the current situation. And if there's any discrepancy with that, I would really invite people to comment on it.
Thanks, Alex. I wonder, Margie, if you could put those two links in the resource part of our Confluence area. Now, I've got Steve and Carlos. We haven't heard from Carlos, so perhaps I could go there and then come back to you, Steve, if that's okay.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos Aguirre, for the records. I have a little bit confusion because we are trying to propose a working group between among CCNSO, GNSO, and ALAC, and other AC and SO. But now we are discussing about very precisely concepts like price, like marginal cost, like GTLDs, new GTLDs, and I consider it's very risky to discuss this, because if we want to have a joint working group, we have the risk to discuss two times, three times, and more times the same concepts. And there are very complex concepts, and we have different point of view if this concept come from users and users, or registrars or registries, or the other constituents. So my question is, is necessary right now to precise the definitions, or we need to wait the other constituencies in the joint working group?
Mm-hmm. If I could respond, and then of course others who wish to should join in. I think all we're doing at the moment, Carlos, is looking at the term competition, pardon me, from our own point of view, and it's very useful that we've got Cheryl here from ALAC and possibly some others. But your point is that we have to take our definitions, if we can get to that point, and then see what other groups with other perspectives might think about that. And I certainly agree that that must be part of our process. But in fact, I was just thinking it's quite useful to start our conversation on these complicated concepts with a perhaps more shared view. So I think our work will be to look at each of the concepts in the group that is interested at the moment, and then when we get a little further down the track, we should engage CCNSO, and ALAC is with us, of course, and at some point GAC will have a view. And at that point, we can take those other perspectives into our thinking before we finalise the report that will then be used by the SOs and ACs in considering their advice to the ICANN board. So that's how I'm seeing things develop at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got about 10 minutes to go, I think, or maybe a little longer. I was wondering, I think we've had some terrific discussion about competition. I'm wondering, in a process sense, and I think I'm talking to Margie, I see Cheryl's hand, how we can just capture these main thoughts. Of course, once people see them written down, then there may be disagreements or other conversation to be had, and that's fine. So my question to Margie is just how we capture where we're going. My thoughts to the group is that perhaps for the next meeting, and I realize we'll have to talk about timing because we run into a holiday period, that we take the next concept, which I think is consumer trust, and have a discussion that focuses on that particular concept in the way that we have done today for competition, and then at a subsequent meeting look at consumer choice, or the other way around if that makes more sense. And perhaps while people are just thinking about that, Cheryl, you had a comment.
Thank you, Rosemary. Cheryl Langdon, all for the transcript record. It just struck me looking at the links that Alex was kind enough to share with us. What I found particularly important with the dashboard type approach that I saw there was a value in having such metrics being collected and looked at for trends over time. I think it's one thing to have a couple of independent resources dedicated to watching prices, which of course, depending on how independent or otherwise, the collection of the data for those resources and the editing of the data that goes into those resources is, like all statistics, can bias outcomes in one way or the other. I think from an affirmation of commitments and measurements of the success of the new GTLD program, which by very definition must be improving competition from a consumer perspective, more choice of names is more choice. Perhaps what we should try and ensure is that it's clear that ICANN needs to take a snapshot pre-launch, a snapshot at launch of each GTLD, and then have some mechanism internally, externally, independent or otherwise, which watches what happens over time in those spaces. I think my gut reaction to those links was how useful having access to metrics comparisons and therefore change over time would be. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Steve?
Thank you. You were proposing that the next topic we move to was trust, but I strongly believe we probably ought to reconcile the incredible overlap between competition and choice before we move to trust.
Mm.
And I think trust will be easy.
Yeah.
Compared to. And in that respect, I fully acknowledge, this came up in Singapore, that the definitions the BC put forward for competition and choice have a lot of overlap in them.
Mm.
We talk about having, always from the consumer's perspective, the registrant's perspective, being able to choose among competing value propositions at different prices from different operators. And I was just proposing on the chat a way to give a little more attention to the supply side and the notion of competition and move things like equitable purpose over to the choice side.
Mm-hmm.
As a registrant looking to a charity, if I'm setting up a new charity to do relief for the Norwegian victims, I might put it in for Norway, .org. I might pick .com or .net. Or I might look for a new TLD like .give or .charity. Of course, I'd want it to be in the script that's used in Norway. It has extra characters that aren't in the ASCII set. And maybe the Islamic world wants to give to that Norwegian charity to show empathy with the victims. And therefore, I'd want an Arabic script TLD available. And so what I get to over and over again is registrants as well as donors or users in this case want to be able to find a domain name in the script and purpose that suits them.
Mm-hmm.
There may be, under the choice definition, there may be the fact that a lot of our new TLDs could be closed.
Mm-hmm.
So we might have a TLD for .give or .charity that has very strict requirements to get into. And then again, we might have a charity-oriented TLD that's wide open, so that it's easy to spontaneously begin a new charity. You know, I know that comes with less security and safety, but that's part of what choice might be about, is that we could have a variety. So my guess is that I'd love to, from the standpoint of the definitions that I've prescribed here, I'd love to show some flexibility at moving things from the competition into the choice definition and vice versa, get those two cemented down before we move on to trust.
I think that's a really good suggestion, and I wasn't suggesting that we segment things assuming that we'd kind of done what needed to be done in that sandpit. Like you, Steve, I see this as quite an iterative process. I was just concerned to make sure that at least we had a first pass through the three areas so that we could have the sort of discussion you're suggesting, that something might be better captured in the competition definition or moved, as you say, to the consumer choice definition.
Rosemary, chat I put in, just to keep moving and to be a consensus builder, I embraced two or three concepts from Wendy's definition and smushed them into the competition definition. Again, the BC hasn't any of this. This is just me.
Yeah.
And to see what people think about that.
Okay, great. So you'll send that to us, or can we get it from the chat?
It's already in the chat. Just scroll into the chat. You'll see. Yeah. You'll see what I typed in.
Yeah. Okay. Margie, is it possible to get that out of the chat and just put it somewhere on our work area so that we don't lose it? And you've got your hand up, Margie.
Yes, I can do that. And also, too, to help visualize the concepts we're talking about, I prepare like a spreadsheet that has like a definition petition and then has different, concerns that have been raised related to the various definitions. We did something like this for those of you that were involved in the PDP work team, where we had this spreadsheet that kind of took down the notes and made it easier to at least see what had been discussed before. And then from that, as the discussion progresses, it can come up with a concrete definition, but at least we'll have captured the ideas that took place in the various calls.
Yes, that would be terrifically helpful, I think. So the thought is that next time we concentrate on the consumer choice topic. Do we want to just quickly have a look at the two definitions that we've had proposed to get our discussion going on consumer choice? Steve, would you mind just taking us through the BC proposal, and then I'll take us through the Wendy proposal?
Sure. The BC proposal for choice was the availability of TLDs that offer competing propositions as to the purpose integrity of their domain name registrant. What the hell am I talking about there? This was something we worked up by saying that differentiation in the TLD space was the key to the new gTLD program. We didn't need more English language, Latin script, general TLDs. We needed differentiation, and that's what's meant by purpose. A special purpose TLD would be a .bike or a geographical TLD, .berlin. They have more along the lines of community or special purpose. The word integrity is in there because the value proposition, the choice that we'll make, will often hinge on whether the TLD operator is going to propose in their contract that they will do integrity assurance on the registrants, meaning they will vet the registrants to ensure that they belong to the community, or they may promise that they ensure certain quality control standards or anti-fraud, privacy protective standards. I cannot dictate any of that, but the promise we've made to the plan is that the new would offer lots of new innovation. It's not innovation to have a new TLD called, .web. That's not innovation. It's only innovation if we start to see some differentiation from generic TLDs, and that'll occur in the purposes and the proposed integrity of the registrants who will get in there. And that'll show up both for registrants choosing where to register their name, where to hang their brand, but it'll also show up for users. I do a search for a charity I want to give to Norway. When I get the search results back from Google or Yahoo, I'll start to pay attention to what TLD they live in, and I might actually trust the .charity or .give search results more than I might trust the .org. I mean, I hope that's not the case, but that may be the case if .give and .charity has spent a lot of money to vet the registrants and be sure that they are reputable reputable donation agencies. I'll stop there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. And if I just read from the notes area Wendy's proposal, choice is the ability of domain name registrants to select among diverse strings and competing registries to find products and services that meet their individual needs. And then she adds diversity might include jurisdiction, scripts, and policies. Okay, so hopefully Wendy will be on our next call so that she can talk us through the nuances of that definition. Could I just comment on Carlos' comment in the chat? I think what I'll do, Carlos, is to make that point in the draft letter that I send to Stefan when we're reaching out to the other groups, to say that just exactly what you said, that these concepts are very complex and that we need different points of view to be able to really understand the perspectives from the point of view of all the members of the community in ICANN. So if you're okay, then I'll make those points in the letter because they're very important. Now, I think we're at the end of our time. Are there any final comments? I see John's hand. John, do you...
Sure. The only comment that I would like to leave with is that there is a difference in the advice that comes from an advisory council and one that comes from a supporting organization. One is advice and one is policy. And if we believe that we can establish this on the basis of advice, then we really don't need to try and go down a road that some of the folks on the phone think is going to be bumpy. If advice is enough, then, you know, the GNSO Council doesn't, or the CCNSO Council don't need to be that much involved, and ALAC or one of the other advisory councils can take the lead. The idea is to respond to the board's motion from Cartagena, you know, so we're now 6-7 months into this. And if we can accelerate the path by considering the value of offering advice or offering policy guidance, if that can be helpful, then maybe we should do that too.
Okay. I'll take Steve and then finish up with Margie.
John, this is Steve DelBianco. On last week's call, we discussed that extensively about wanting to keep the ACSO counselors engaged, so that as the advice bubbles up from this working group, in the best of all worlds, it's a single body of advice that the participants from all four groups have shared. But as each of us, as we send it up to GNSO Council, or send it over to the ALAC, or CCNSO Council, we understand that each of those respective ACSOs, they may or may not endorse all of it. They may warmly embrace it. They may decide to differ and do that should be part of the advice that goes to the board as well. So in the best of all worlds, it's just one big, happy, joint working group. We have a consensus set of advice, not policy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that advice, it would be inappropriate for us to just fire that letter into the board and bypass the ACSO counselors. And that's why we wanted to run it through them. And that's one of the reasons that we ended up taking on this extra heavy structure of having a charter, so that when our advice bubbles up to the GNSO or CCNSO or ALAC, they'll know what to do with it. Of course, we can't tell them what to do, and we do hope they'll endorse it and send it on to the board. Does that make any? Does that make sense as an answer?
It does to me, if you're asking me directly.
Yeah.
If I can just follow in there, Rosemary, from Steve's statement, Cheryl, for the transcript record. Of course, that's exactly how the At-Large Advisory Committee is designed to create its advice in its version 3.0, which is where we are now. The 15-person ALAC, which could, in its own right, simply sit down and make up its own mind, because under the bylaws, we're the only ones who actually need to make the advice on behalf of Rest and Humankind to the board on these issues. But we choose to have a model that brings in as much multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, consensus-build input into the formulation of that advice. So the outputs of a work group such as this, be it co-chartered, jointly chartered, or, you know, coming from five different sources, is ideally taken into account. And the less repetition and the thinner we have to spread our volunteers in that process, the better.
Thanks, Cheryl. Margie.
Yeah, I just before we close, I wanted to address the issue of our next meeting. Rosemary, have you given any thought to when you'd like to have the next meeting?
It was one of the things I just wanted to chat with people about, because I understand that our European colleagues, I'm not sure about people in the US, are going on an extended period of leave now. So I was going to put up a straw proposal of 3 weeks to see how that suited everybody. Or if people are keen to keep going with the 2-weekly call, then I'm quite happy about that. I just wanted to give us a chance in this meeting to see where people's thoughts were on this particular topic of when we should try to schedule the next meeting. So Cheryl's okay with the 2 weeks, and I'm also okay with the 2 weeks and the time. Is there anyone on the call for whom this is really going to be a problem? Debbie's okay.
It's Margie. As the staff support here, if we do it the first week of August, that would be, or sorry, the second week of August, between the 8th and the 12th, that would be best for me, because I'm on vacation prior to that, and then I have surgery right on the 12th, so I'll be out for probably a week or so. So it would be a while if you need my support. So I'm suggesting August 9th, 10th, or 11th.
Okie doke. So if we did it at this exact time in 2 weeks, what date would that be, Margie?
It would be the 11th.
The 11th. Okay, well, why don't we shoot for that? And Steve is suggesting that we take 90 minutes next time, and I'm okay with that. What about others? Or why don't we shoot for that, and those people who can't stay for the 90 minutes can just leave the call when they need to?
Oh, I'm sorry. Actually, it's the 10th, if you're talking about Wednesday at this time.
Okay, so it's Wednesday the 10th for you.
That suits you better, doesn't it, Margie?
That works for me fine.
Great. Mainly because we need you. We will all reorganize our diaries around you, Margie. Trust me.
All right. Well, would you mind just sending out something to everybody, Margie, just letting them know that date? And it looks like we're happy to have a go at a 90-minute call. So let's try that as well.
Okay, got it.
Okay, thank you, everybody. I think it's been a really interesting and productive discussion, and it's certainly nice to be focused on the content rather than the process. So I'll look forward to chatting in a couple of weeks' time. Bye for now.
Thanks, Rosemary. Bye, all.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, all.